thank you very much, but I'm supposed to be welcoming you. And I am delighted to welcome you to the White House. I am told that this is the third occasion in which Time Incorporated has brought distinguished European leaders here to the White House to meet presidents and their members of their administration, and I'm delighted to be a part of that tradition now. You've perhaps heard since you've been here that we have made some slight motion to change the course. The rumor is true. We're just insisting that government live within its means, that it unleash the spirit of individual enterprise, and we're doing this by just changing one little two-letter word. We're changing control by government to control of government. And as we strive for economic recovery and strengthening our defenses, we look forward to working with your countries, our friends and allies, to preserve all the magnificent ideas that go into making what we call Western civilization. The rule of law, economic liberty, as well as political freedom, the right to worship God as we see fit, all those things that we sometimes take for granted until we look up and discover that someone's taken them away from us. So I'm not going to go on making a speech in any way further than that. Possibly we have an opportunity for a dialogue here. You might have some questions, and I'd be very happy to answer those questions. And yes?
Mr. President, it would seem to some of us in Europe, but amongst the public in various European nations, not speaking of their governments, but of the people, there is a certain anxiety or lessening of enthusiasm for what seems to them to be orthodox American foreign policy. It's expressed obviously in different ways. Would you agree with that in any way? Do you see that from here in the same way that some of us see it from London?
Well, I hope we mean the same thing by orthodox American policy. I too think that a change is needed. What I think of is in recent years, there has been too much of a tendency of the United States to be inconsistent, to vacillate, to have a double standard in such admirable areas as human rights, in that we seem to find greater violation among our friends than we were ever wont to find among those who would be adversaries. And with those leaders that I've been privileged to meet already, Prime Minister of Germany, Foreign Minister of Italy, and of France, and of other countries, to assure them that we want to work in concert with our allies and provide no more surprises for them in which they read about something in the paper and it's the first inkling they've had of it. We want to consult, work with, and frankly, we believe there is a great threat abroad in the world today in an ideological dichotomy in this world, and we think that those who would be adversaries have to find out that there is a price the Western world will not pay to go on in ease and comfort and peace. Is that, I don't know whether that answered it or not, but someone else?
In 1976, President Gerald Ford issued an admirable paper on civil aviation policy. I run an airline. In the ensuing 4 years that followed, a situation which I will summarize by calling it a mess. Are we going to continue with the mess, or are we going to have an aviation policy?
Now, if I understand correctly, are we going to have an aviation policy? Right at this moment, I feel a little bit like the old lady who didn't like flying. children or grown children began to try and persuade her, she said, no, if God had intended me to fly, he would have given me wings. I'm just going to sit in the living room and watch television the way God intended I should. I think if I understand that one, yes, this I think is a part of what I was saying before. Here again, there have been too many instances of not recognizing each other's problems, the need to cooperate, and we're going to try to do that.
Mr. President, some of us over the years, the last 10 to 15 years, have been very concerned at the performance and the inconsistencies of the United Nations. We get a feeling that a sense of realism is now abroad, and that America is prepared to teach the whole of the United Nations the effects of life. Would you confirm that, sir?
Now, I think I lost a last line or two there.
I'm sorry. Would you be prepared to say that the United Nations will be treated realistically on its true values and not on what we think were inflated values in the past?
Yes, I think that the United Nations never made a change that was provided for in its charter, that as it developed and as it became organized, that they would then meet again and see if there was any change needed to meet new problems. We've had the creation of a great many new nations in the world. And I think the lack of realism in that you can get a two-thirds majority vote in the General Assembly from nations whose combined population is less than 10% of the population of the member nations of the UN. And I think that there has to be a realistic look to the part played by those nations that are responsible for world peace. And here again, I think there's been a great inconsistency. The Charter says that you are only eligible for the United Nations if you have renounced military force as a means of settling disputes. We certainly have ignored that one all the way. I think it's time for a number of, particularly the Western world nations, to stand up and demand more adherence to what was the dream of the United Nations when it began. And we're prepared to do this, and we're going to have to start doing it. We can see trouble spots all over the world where the very charter is being violated that they all signed, and yet the United Nations seems to be incapable of doing anything about it. And we need more than a debating society. Yes, I tend to be optimistic, and I've met with the leadership of the opposition and found them totally divided. I have accepted a number of things that they proposed, including in the tax bill that we had presented. The main argument seems to be over whether we should have an across-the-board income tax cut for a period of 3 years. And they don't want to go beyond that first year point. And I believe that if we're to, our tax program is designed to stimulate productivity, to provide incentive, to get the economy moving again, not just to give the people a reduction. As a matter of fact, the reduction that we've proposed is nothing but a lowering of the tax increase that they built into the system before we got here. And I believe that the business community, this includes everything from the shopkeeper on up, is going to want the stability of looking ahead and having a guarantee. And so I've said 3 years across the board, and I've dug my heels in, and now they've finally come up with a proposal that does meet a little way, and finally we have something to negotiate with. We're asking for the moon, they're offering green cheese, and we're going to settle someplace in between there. Someone else with a question, or have we...
Mr. President, your Secretary of State the other evening said quite forcefully how important he felt it was that the Soviets understand precisely the policy of this administration. Have you gotten any evidence as yet from the Soviets that they are beginning to fully understand what your administration stands for and what the government should do?
Yes, a couple of very harsh letters from the Kremlin. Yes, I think they understand. But now we want our allies to understand that we're not over here with a chip on our shoulder and trigger happy and going to do anything of the kind. I have said repeatedly, I'll sit down with them for as long as it takes to negotiate a realistic reduction of the nuclear weapons, the strategic weapons that are such a threat to all the world. But when we sit down at that table to negotiate, we're going to do it now, not on our side of the table, having come to the table after making unilateral disarmaments. They're going to know that if they're not willing to see that kind of reason, then we're going to match them. And I believe also that at that table for the first time must be some other things on the table. It isn't enough to just go there and start talking about a limitation on arms. I think we're going to have to take up the matters of their conduct in the world, those people whose rights they've invaded and other nations that they have in violation of their pledge to the United Nations that they have entered, such as Afghanistan. All those things are going to have to be talked about in the context of reducing the weapons. It's the knowledge that their imperialistic course is going to be changed and that they're going to look as if and really try to join the rest of us in trying to have a peaceful and a helpful world. And I think they're getting that idea. No, as a matter of fact, we've been getting along just fine. Anyone else?
Mr. President, your secretary also last night said that he was just on the eve of going to China. And I wonder if you have some thoughts about what you expect that trip might produce and whether or not in the not-too-distant future you might follow up.
Well, I haven't had any plans for that. I've been kind of busy, and being new at the job, I figure I'd better really get into it before I see whether I can take off and go around the world. No, the thing is, I think, to impress on them that we, too, want to further the relations that have been established with the People's Republic of China. But here again, I think they also have to understand that we have a law in the land passed by the Congress called the Taiwan Relations Act, and we're going to abide by that law. We're not going to turn our back on a longtime friend and ally in order to make another one. And I hope that we can impress on them that they should have more confidence in us if we behave that way, because otherwise they'd have to think that we would dump them in order to make another ally.
President, thank you very much.
Well, thank you all very much, and delighted to have you all here.
Mr. President, may I, on behalf of all your guests here this afternoon, thank you most sincerely for extending your hospitality at the White House. and also for giving up so much of your very valuable time to be with us here this afternoon. I think you know that we have spent 3 days with the senior members of your administration. And I think that one overwhelming feeling that I have is that you, if I may say so, are to be congratulated on the high caliber of people that you have selected to be a part of your administration. They have made a great impression upon us.
Well,
I feel that there is an integrity and a determination to carry out the policies which you have inspired them with, which came through loud and strong. And there is certainly, if I may say so, shining through all this, a great loyalty to you, not just as the president of this great country, but if I may say so, to you personally.
Well, you know what, Jim, thank you.
May I also say that it gives us great joy and pleasure to see that you are seemingly fully restored to health and vigor after that most unpleasant injury that you suffered. Thank you very much indeed for having us here.
Well, Your Lordship, thank you very much for those kind words. And I feel fine, and I want you to know that the crack in my voice has nothing to do with the recent incident. I wish I could sound more dramatic if it were, but I'm subject to hay fever. That's the reason for that. But again, I thank you, and I'm delighted to hear what you said about our cabinet members and so forth, because I said during the campaign that I would want people for whom a government job would be a step down, that their own personal accomplishments would be so far greater that it would be a step down. And looking over the dossiers of some of those men that we've picked, and the incomes they gave up in order to serve government, I told some of them, I said, I meant for you to step down. I didn't intend you should jump off the bridge. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
neat. I've never seen that before.
Salary, you count on expenses and, you know.